Well, I'm back from my trip. Thanks for letting me skip last week.
Oh, no.
Welcome back.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, I know. It was really huge inconvenience for you, Jimmy, to not do a podcast. Thank you for being so graceful.
Yeah. What did you do, by the way? I mean, can you talk about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I got hired to host a show. It's a YouTube show, but it's kind of a new thing for me. So this company called Test Equity is putting together, they make testing equipment for like labs and manufacturing and stuff, all this stuff. And so they have a bunch of partners and they're making a series of videos that are like, let's take a piece of technology or a piece of science and just go to the people who do the work, talk to them about it. We'll show that we have products there and stuff, but it's like a kind of learning thing. So they hired me as the host and they basically told me at the beginning, your job is to ask questions and to be curious. I'm like, cool, I can do that. So I go to that. We just did the first episode of this last week. And basically I go to a place, they line up interviews with scientists and with people who work there and do the thing. And I get to go in and ask them questions and be myself. And there's a script, but they're like, you know, it's just so you know kind of where we're headed. You can use it or not use it. It doesn't matter. Just talk to the people and get to know
them.
That's
great. It's going to be ongoing?
Yeah. So we signed up for two. And then if those do well, there's another six, like an option for another six in the first season. And then if they like it, then they'll keep doing it. But
that's great.
So I'd never done anything like this before. And so I was really hesitant about it. In fact, I turned them down at the beginning because I was just like, nah, it just doesn't seem like me. And then when I had a call with them, they were like being kind of persistent. I had a call with them and they were like, we can find somebody else, but we actually want you to do it. And I'm like, that's weird. Why? And so as they explained it, I was like, okay, well, I mean, it sounds interesting because they were like, it's not a commercial. It's more of a kind of like Bill Nye, you get to go in and just learn about stuff and be curious. And, you know, you don't have to do research going into it to know what to ask or whatever, just like find out. So even after all that, I was like pretty, I don't know. I was not looking forward to going because I didn't know it was going to go. I didn't know any of the people involved. I didn't know how big the crew was going to be or if it was one of those, like, you know, right before they call action, somebody run in and like makeups me and stuff. And I didn't know what it was going to be like.
Makeups
and so,
me.
And, you know, that like last looks and somebody runs in and powders everything and runs off. And it was totally not like that. This was a group of five people running camera. There's a director and then like five people running camera. And there were two people from the brand there and all of them were awesome. Like I would hang out with any of them on any given day. We nerded out about movies and everybody was saying like movie quotes here and there. And it was so much fun. We had a blast and the people were super cool and I got to know them all. Never once did they say, like, can you change your shirt to a different or can you put your hair over the, you know, it was nothing like that. They never, all the things that I was worried about didn't happen. And so it was actually a really good experience. I met three really cool engineers. We went to Henkel, which is the company that owns Loctite. They own a bunch of other brands as well, but they own Loctite. And so we were basically at the Loctite headquarters. And they have like a bunch of labs there. They do all the formulations for this, industrial side, I guess. Not the stuff you'd buy at like the Home Depot and stuff, but the industrial side, they do medical and they do manufacturing and all this stuff. But they do all that formulation there. So there's like a whole floor of labs and literal scientists in there with lab coats on doing work. And we're walking by and they're like, you can't film anything on this floor, but we can look at it, walk through and the scientists would look up at us and kind of, who is that? Like, why are there people outside of my, you know, and they go back to formulating and it was really, really cool. And the crew, like I said, was awesome, super easy to work with. They let me be me on camera and didn't try to, you know, direct me to, in fact, I don't think they ever gave me any direction as far as like my presentation. You know, it was more like, you're gonna have to talk to this guy, he does this, so start thinking about how you want to approach him or what you want to know about him. Or it was that kind of direction. It was super cool. It was a good time. We were there, went up on Tuesday, flew up on Tuesday. We shot for 2 days in their offices and then flew back the next morning. So, you know, it was kind of like not a full week, but a few days of travel and everything.
Where was this at?
It was in Connecticut, which is beautiful this time of year.
I mean, yeah. It's right in my neighborhood.
Yeah. It was actually, it looked really similar to where I live in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. It kind of hilly, but not mountainy. All the trees were the same. The only bummer was this place we were at, this Hinkle building, was literally right next to, like, their property touches Dinosaur State Park. And so as I'm going there, I'm looking at what's around, trying to see if there's a climbing gym or something. You know, I could, like, one of the evenings I could go do something else. There's nothing there, by the way, at all. But there's this Dinosaur State Park, and apparently it's the world's largest dinosaur track preserve or something. And so there's this huge rock area with just tons of dinosaur tracks embedded in the rock, and they built a state park around it, and there's all these hiking trails, and there's some fossils and stuff. One of my kids really, really likes dinosaurs, and so I was excited to try to go, you know, get some video and take some pictures and stuff to send to him, and they closed at 4:30 every day, so I didn't get to go. And it was like, bummer. I could stand at the front door of this place and be like, it's right there. I could walk, you know, and be there before I run out of breath. It's like right there.
It's 90 miles from my house. I've never, ever heard of this place. I would love to check that out.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
It was cool. So it was a new experience for me. Met some really great people. And I was, one of the things I was worried about going into it was, you know, I signed up for two of these things at least. And if this first one is bad, if these people are not good, if, you know, I don't know. I just didn't know what to expect. And if it's not good, next month I have to go do it again with people that I don't want to be around. And so I was really worried about that. And so I, bless you, Jimmy. I'm glad you were muted, but bless you. So I got to the end of this thing and I was like, I'm looking forward to next month because I get to go hang out with these people again. You know, it was that kind of just talking about parenting and talking about movies and getting to know each other, and we had a bunch of different stuff in common, and it was great.
You know, see, so for the most part, go ahead, David, and I'll tell you my point.
Okay, it's so weird because I just got an email from my agent last week about hosting this other thing. I don't think I can talk about anything more than that, but I was wondering, since Jimmy and I share the same agent, if you got an email about hosting a thing and to make yourself available in January.
No, I did not.
No.
So okay. You guys are both winning.
Feel like it right now, but okay.
No, what I was going to say is that most TV people, most TV experiences you have, they're all just day hires, or they're all just people coming together. So there's usually only one person on the set that's not likable. For the most part, the entire crew is likable. There's usually one person that's like everybody hates.
But, and if there's not that one person, you're that one
person.
That's a good point. No, but for the most part, when you're on a crew, everybody in their own way is an artist trying to figure out, and this is just one day gig for them, unless it turns into like a long ongoing series, which I've never had that experience. But in general, everybody's there passing through trying to find something, and everybody for job security is typically pleasant and easy to deal with. There was an anomaly on the Making It show. There was one person that needed help, and, you know, help in a sympathetic way. And, you know, everybody knew there was a problem, and ultimately he got fired, but he got help that he needed, and everybody was very sympathetic. But that was the only kind of stick in the mud when we had our last show. But that person is doing much better now, and everybody loved him. But he needed sympathetic help, not like get rid of him. He's annoying help. But in general, everybody's there to like and help and get to know each other in a real positive setting. And that's always been my experience. There's, like I said, occasionally there's one producer that has to watch the budget, and everybody's like, ugh. Every time that person walks in the room, everybody rolls their eyes. But it's usually more for like a business reason and not necessarily personality reason. But that job does attract the personality that nobody likes. So it tends to go hand in hand. You understand what I mean? But in general, yeah, the camera guys are always visionaries for something that they have going on the side. So the camera guys love having the fun to express themselves filming you, even if it's just straightforward, but they always have a little bit of a artistic concept, mm-hmm. always, you know, as much as they can within the limits of what they're doing on that day. But Derek was very pleasantly surprised to find that all the cameramen on our shoot had really interesting projects going on the side. I'm like, yeah, everyone's just trying to make a living to do what they really want to do.
Yeah.
Like, it's what we all do.
Yeah, it was really cool. The company that's putting this together, the media company that's like shooting it and stuff, is called Media Juice. And from what I could tell, there's two people that are on that full time, but then the other people are like freelancers that they work. I don't know exactly how it's laid out, but they're people they've worked with for a long time on and off, you know, and they bring them on. So they knew each other well. They had a lot of history. And I think I got the feeling that probably all the trouble people had been weeded out a long time ago because, you know, they kept calling the same people back to do work together. And they've shot a bunch of stuff that's been on Netflix. They did like a bunch of video game documentary type stuff. And they have something called Video Game the Movie, and I haven't watched it yet, but I know it's on Netflix. But then they've been working. They just finished a feature film that's coming out in the theaters, and I got to see like a trailer for that, and it looks really cool. And yeah, you're right. They were all creative people, and they all had something that they were really excited about with the work that they do. And like one guy was a graphic designer as well, so he shot stuff, and then he and his wife had a graphic design business where they did design stuff. So we talked about that for a long time, and the two ladies that were there from marketing for Test Equity, they're the client, you know, in this. They're the ones that have to make sure that the brand talking points and everything. And so they're just like two ladies that came on. They were both very nice. And we just got to talking while we were waiting somewhere. And it turns out one of them just got her black belt in karate. So I was like, okay, you need to tell me more about that. And she starts telling me all about the karate stuff. And she's like, yeah, and I learned this, I don't remember what it's called, this Filipino stick fighting thing. And so basically I can beat up anybody with a stick, and it doesn't have to be this kind of stick. It could be an umbrella. It could be this. And this is like a, you know, middle-aged just lady with kids and stuff. And she's a very tough person. And then the other lady who works there, I got to talking to her, and somebody said something about running, and she was like, oh yeah, I've done some marathons. I'm like, oh cool. How many have you done? She's like, 11. What? And so then we got to talk about running, and they're just not people that, you know, you would expect to have these, like, they care about something enough to go really deep on these things. I just wouldn't have pictured them being either one of those things, but they're awesome. And I learned a lot from talking to them, and we had exciting conversations separately, you know, with this person and with this person, with that person. So it was a really good time. It was a breath of fresh air because, like I said, I went into it kind of, like, I don't know how this is going to go. Like, I might be stuck in Connecticut for 4 days. That's how I was looking at it. And we had a lot of fun. And I got to, like, go into labs and put on lab coats and shoot stuff and learn about. They have these, like, they're basically like little CNC machines. It's a gantry that moves. They have a handheld controller so that they can jog things and they can program start and end points. And instead of programming them with a cut path like we would, they put like an applicator on the end of it that feeds some sort of a glue or Loctite or whatever. And so like in one of the medical applications, these are all application engineers. So they figure out how to apply the Loctite in a manufacturing setting to something effectively. That's what they do. So they had this little tray about 6 inches square with a bunch of little plastic things in it and then a pack of needles. And so they were showing that you take needles and you put them in these little plastic holders, and then you program the robot to place the needles. Then you program the robot to go in and squirt adhesive in each one of the joints to glue the needle into the holder. And these are tiny. I mean, this whole thing is like as big as my thumbnail. And that's how those things are manufactured. But their job is to figure out how to do that effectively at scale and squirt adhesive in tiny spots accurately. And so I got to go into the lab, see these machines, play with these machines a little bit when I shouldn't have. And you know, see how they do this type of work. And I got to go into training for like some of the salespeople were taking training on Loctite. And I learned something about Loctite that I did not know. This is interesting. So you think of Loctite, you think of it as like, how do you think it works? Just out of curiosity.
It creates a resistance between threads.
Yeah. That's
you know how when you squirt Loctite and then it gets on your hands and it stays wet forever?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand that. So it turns out that this, whatever this compound is.
Reacts with metal?
It reacts with metal and the lack of oxygen. So mm-hmm. It's anaerobic. But it has to have those two things. And if you squirt it on plastic with a lack of oxygen, it will stay wet forever. And that's why the stuff that's on the outside touching oxygen never cures. The stuff that cures is only down in between threads.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. I was just guessing. I didn't know
that. And we did some tests like in the lab to see, you know, if you do it this way, is it ever going to harden? Or they had a few different versions of it with different properties and stuff. But I actually learned a lot about how it worked and why it was made in the first place and why they have different versions of it. And
I just use CA glue, but don't tell them that.
Well, they sell that too. They sell that too. And they were talking about the difference there and what it's used for versus the Loctite stuff. Basically, if it's metal, Loctite's the better solution. If it's not, then CA works. But it was cool. It was a good time. You know, traveling is not my favorite thing, but it wasn't bad. And the people that I was involved with made it worthwhile, and so yeah,
I traveled while we were apart. I completely forgot, but now you just reminded me. I went down to Klingspor woodworking event in I don't even know where were we. North Carolina. Hickory, North Carolina. We were in and Derek and I went down there. I did bandsaw demos. Derek did grinding demos for the event. And got to hang out with Izzy. Saw Izzy for the first time in a while. Izzy started a new tool company called Swan Tools. And he's got some really innovative marking stuff initially, but he's got a million ideas. You know, Izzy never stops. So Izzy was there displaying his new stuff that's just about to be on the market. And I got some of it. I'm going to show it off on Instagram. But the highlight of the trip is getting to meet Mr. Klingspor, who came to the United States in 1980 from Germany to start an American division of his family sandpaper company that his grandfather started his great grandfather started 130 years ago. Sandpaper company. Wow. Amazing history that he went through, and he took me and Derek. We had dinner, breakfast, and dinner again. And he showed us the factory, showed us the store. In North Carolina, there's 5 Klingspor woodworking retail shops, which I did not know.
I didn't either.
So I'm going to certainly be working with them over the next couple of years, it seems like. And really, really interesting story. And Mr. Klingspor is a very interesting guy. A guy that runs, it's always, I've noticed this in the toy business. Every time I used to go to Hong Kong and I'd meet the owners, the person that started the company is very, very, very interesting, curious, hands-on guy, never wears a suit. He's always like the guy that, you know, once the corporation gets started, the corporation now has like executives and all these people that work there. And if the owner walks in the room, nobody would know it because he's like a regular guy, hands-on, the guy that would still fix the stuff in the office. And that's what Mr. Klingspor reminded me of. Very, very meticulous as far as the office, and he designed the whole office. He has a hand in everything, but you wouldn't know it, just like meeting him in the lobby.
How old is he?
He's probably in his 70s, early 70s, I'm guessing. Okay. He's a very healthy guy. He doesn't look elderly, but you know, based on his story, you could tell he's been around for a long time. So when it was 1980, that was 45 years ago. That's when he came here to start the company. So if he was 25 then,
yeah,
70. Very nice guy. So we had a great time, and the couple of people that worked for him showed us around. We were a very, very, very good trip. So I'm sure I'll be working with Klingspor. I did some bandsaw demos, and I did get footage of me doing one full long demo from a weird camera angle. I just set up my GoPro and said, let's see if it works. I always say GoPro, but GoPro now is synonymous with like Band-Aid. GoPro means small action camera, but the actual GoPro does not get used ever by anybody anymore. It's always a DJI. So I set up my DJI and I got it one good thing. So I'll probably post that to Patreon. It's about 40 minutes long of me doing a bandsaw demo and talking to the audience and answering questions. So I did that about 4 or 5 times through the weekend. And yeah, that's that was my trip. That went really well. And as far as things I'm working on since I'm talking, I just started. I finished my marble table. That was a marble table. I had a hand carved marble, which was really treacherous. So I did some Instagram stories, and that video is out now. And I'm working on a chair right now. I came up with this idea. I have a couple of things that I do all at the same time. So I'm doing a chair that's got walnut sides, metal ribs that hold the left and the right side together, and leather. So I get Taipan glue. I get my Harvey bandsaw in there, and I get Weaver leather in there, and I get Lincoln Electric in there. So that's going to be a video that covers all my bases. That video nice. Won't be out this week only because I have to post episode 10 of The Graveyard House because there's some obligations in there as well. So, I just got a long text message from somebody. No, I'm a little nervous because my painter guy is going to come and paint the containers I was telling you guys before we started. And I had to walk away for a minute because I hear trucks backing up and beeping. Do you guys hear that? You don't hear that? Okay. Because I hear trucks and I hear guys talking and yelling, and I'm looking at my security cameras and there's nobody on the property, but I hear these guys that sound like they're in my front yard. And I went outside and they're changing a wire on the street. So it's all like the local power company is changing the wire in front of my house. But I didn't know that until just as we got started. So that I'm working on that chair. It's interesting. And I'm thinking about how to connect metal. And if you guys remember, years ago, I made these stools where I put these cuffs to hold the bottom of the legs together. And I just welded them right on the wood. So I'm going to do the same thing with this. I'm going to blacksmith up some collars to hold everything. And then I'm just going to weld it right when it's on the wood. So if the wood burns, it's going to be part of the artistic. So I'm looking forward to burning the wood. But it's funny. This vision just keeps getting more and more focused as I'm working on it. And I'm excited about it. I'm excited. Versus when I was carving the marble last week, every time I walked away from it, I'm like, I didn't break it yet. I didn't ruin it yet. But I had to still go in there and finish another letter. And I went in there and I'd spend a half hour making another two letters. And then I'd walk away and go, all right, I didn't destroy the marble yet. I was expecting the marble to like chip in half or me to chip out the middle of an O. And I would have had to go back there and CA glue it in and not tell anybody. But
yeah, so I saw you doing that on Instagram. But I didn't have any context for what it was because I don't think we had talked about you.
Yeah, it didn't come up. No, I haven't mentioned it really. It's going to be a table for their showroom in Texas. They have a showroom in Texas that some of the things I've made have gone to. And it's going to go there. It's a big slab of marble that I bought. I was going to do this video in the summer and then just things got in the way and it just kept getting pushed off. And so I finally got to it. And it's got the logos for all the products represented in that showroom. And it's a marble, slab of marble from Italy that I got through my friends at the Complete Sculptor. They import marble. And I carved the logos in it, hand-carved it with a chisel.
Wow.
I thought about, for a couple seconds, of carrying that in and putting it in my laser and laser etching the small words, which would have been fine. But the piece of stone weighs 350 pounds. I didn't think the table would handle it.
The laser would just collapse on itself.
Yeah. So not only would it not handle it, then it wouldn't, I'd have to move it. So
yeah,
there was a bunch of little taglines in some of the logos. I just didn't carve. I was like, forget it. The broad logo itself is enough.
So now, could you have done, I don't have a fiber laser, so I don't even know if this is possible, but I did see that one of the companies recently had a portable fiber laser and it was like, it just didn't have a bottom to it, basically, and you could plop it down on something. Would something like that have worked?
Yeah, I probably could have done that. I don't have one that does. I have one that's like got a base bolted to it. I probably could have moved that around. But then I just imagine this, the lining it up of, and, you know, lasers go glitchy when you least need it to go glitchy, like on a coin or something. Or even Derek mentioned years ago he was going to get a fiber laser to laser etch like gun things because Derek has a family member that has a gun store. And I said, I wouldn't want to mess up grandpa's shotgun with a laser etch. And that would be the day it gets glitchy. And you can't go backwards from that. And it's the same thing with the stone. I was afraid if I tried to do that, it would get glitchy. And then I'd be then I'm trying to cover up a mistake. So I kept hedging my bet. I go a little further, a little further, a little further. And everything was pretty good. I wish it was a lot better, but it was pretty good. First time ever carving marble. And so I was like, all right, it's good enough.
Huh. And what tools did you use for that?
I just used a chisel that I got from Home Depot, just a little stone chisel. And I kept sharpening it. And it's really interesting how when you sharpen, you get much crisper cuts versus you could tell when it's getting dull. The cuts are a little grungy and then you sharpen it. So I really would like to dig deeper into a marble piece, something a little bit more freeform, something like you see these sexy guys like chiseling church parts online. This is like one guy that's always out there with like in a tank top and he like makes the most beautifully perfect
things.
Oh,
I've seen that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'd like to dig into a bigger piece like that where you can sculpt it in the round. Here, I was just kind of chiseling a tombstone. But it's interesting when you think about what I did in that video that's out. Guys did this all day long for all the tombstones in my graveyard are all hand chiseled. They're all, I guess, like kind of toward the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, things were probably sandblasted. But for the most part, all of those are hand sculpted, I would guess.
Hmm.
All the words in all those tombstones are hand chiseled. Yeah, it's a living.
there's an option.
By the letter.
Yeah, you get paid by the letter.
Yeah.
So that was that. And then, so I'm excited about this leather wood steel chair. It's a, could be a thing.
Yeah.
Could be a thing. The next big thing.
Could be a thing.
Yeah.
Well, David, what were you even up to? What state did you go to this last week?
I did not travel at all. Uh-huh. I did not have the interesting adventures that you guys did. I found this older office chair on the side of the road one night, and it's not like a office chair where it moves up and down or whatever. It was just kind of like a stationary office chair, and it was at night, and I driving down the road, and I was like, that looks cool. Somebody's setting it out for garbage. I will take it. So I threw it in the back of the truck, sat on it for a couple of weeks, and decide, and it's just been in my way. Like no matter where I put it, it is always in the way. And so a couple of weeks ago, we decided to, let's just work on this project. So I would, the thought was the frame of this chair was super cool out of chrome, and I was going to make it into a more modern chair. And then as soon as we took off the seat in the back, it was super obvious that this was meant to be a side table. And so that's basically the video that's coming out today. If you're listening to this on Friday, the video should be out today. Just converting this old office chair into a cool table. Of course, we're using walnut and stuff. And then I don't want to give too much away, but I honor the original chair in the design of the table. So it's a fun little project.
Cool. Awesome. Have you done anything at the rental property yet? Any shop stuff?
A few days ago, I put out a video of setting up a new shop from scratch. So I hauled off.
Didn't see that.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry.
So basically we were over at the other place and I had this empty garage and I'm like, if I was going to start from absolute zero, this is exactly how I would do it. And so we start off with this tool. And in the video, I kind of go over like most of the tools in that shop are kind of budgety tools, except for a couple of exceptions. And I talk about like if I was just getting started, you could spend this much on a used tool. You could spend this much on this cheap Wend tool that I have, or my main shop, I've spent this much. And so you kind of get like three price points of lowest, middle, and highest. And we do that up until we got a full shop set up over there. So I'm set up over there mostly. I don't have good lighting to shoot video. And I forgot totally about dust collection. So I got to figure out some dust collection for some things over there. But yeah, I got a second shop set up over there now. And now that it's not heated, so winter's coming. So I probably won't do a whole lot there until spring. But one of the first projects that we have to do for the rental house is the insurance company is making us put up a railing. So there's steps that go upstairs and there's a railing on the right side, but the left side is just open. And the insurance company has a policy against that. So they suggested putting a railing on the left side. But instead of putting a railing, I think we're going to put like a wood slats that go from the floor to the ceiling and kind of work in this little triangle. Not from the floor to the ceiling, but the 45 degree angle part of the ledge up to the ceiling. So trying to design something cool, and we want something that's going to fit in with other things that we're going to make in the future. So I guess the biggest decision right now is whatever wood that I choose to use for this slatted railing thing is what I'm going to use throughout the rest of the cottage. So you would think I would use walnut because I use walnut for everything. I get a lot of comments saying you use too much walnut. There's other
Man,
woods out there.
Whatever. Use all the walnut you want to use. That's your stuff, not theirs.
Yeah. The problem is sometimes, I have this amazing hardwood dealer here in town, but they don't always have wide walnut. They don't always have, you know, 4/4, 8/4 inch thick walnut. So, but there's always that in cherry or other woods. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I got to decide.
I've still got a bunch of cherry. If you want any cherry, just come down here for a weekend, take all the cherry you want. And yes.
Yep. Can I sleep in the pool house?
Absolutely. It doesn't have a front door, but you can sleep in it. Yes.
It's looking really good, by the way. I've been following along with that, and it is mighty impressive what you've done.
Thanks. Very good. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and I've gotten some really nice comments from people. Like, you know, people didn't think that you could do that much stuff by yourself, I guess, or they couldn't. I don't know, but it's been cool, and I'm anxious to get back to it because I was gone for almost a week. So yeah. You know, and now I'm doing an Arduino project that I didn't talk about. So I'm working on that this week, but I'm anxious to get back to the next steps, you know?
Nice.
Yeah.
When it's all said and done, will the inside be finished? Like drywalled and painted and all that?
I think eventually, yeah. I mean, the goal right now is just to get the outside finished. And then, because we're not really sure what we're going to do with the inside, like what it's going to be. It's going to be storage, but...
You said it was a pottery house too, maybe?
It might be a pottery studio.
Oh, that's
it might
right.
not. It might, you know, and even if it is, like having drywall is not necessary or even a good thing because water is going to get slung around and stuff like that. Yeah. So, yeah, really don't know, but eventually it will be. But man, I stand in there and I look at that tall wall and I think I would kick myself if I didn't put a climbing wall in there because it's like a 12-foot climbing wall in my house, at my home. Inside, I could walk out to it every morning and like do a workout, do some climbing, small space. So
you mentioned that in the video, and would that get old? Would it be something that you would use a lot?
I think I would. I mean, you know, not daily, but I think climbing is something I used to do a whole lot of. And then when I was in college, I built a wall and behind a house that we were renting. And then I moved that wall to a house that we bought. And then I moved that wall to a house that we bought. And I built one in high school. And then when we moved here, I built one in my kids' room and then one out at the farm. So like,
I didn't know that you were that into
yeah,
it.
That's
like
crazy.
You've built many versions of this.
I built
that's
one
great.
In an apartment in New York City for a client.
Yeah. And they've always had to be short, you know, because you build them inside or you build them outside and then you can only use them certain times of the, you know, year because of the weather and rain and whatever. And so having a 12-foot tall and a corner, because there's a corner there. So you have a tall wall and then a tall sloped wall that comes down. So you could put a lot of stuff in that corner, have some pads that you throw down when you're climbing for safety, but the room's still usable for everything else. And having that inside... I think I would end up using it a lot more. So, but
how high is it? How high is this high ceiling?
It's 12 feet.
Oh, yeah.
Which, if you're climbing without a rope, that's really about as far as you want to go up. I mean, maybe 14. But if you go past that, a fall from that can be dangerous, even on big, thick pads. You know, you can just land on something weird. So they call that bouldering. So if you're climbing without a rope on a lower 12 to 14, they call that bouldering. So it would be a bouldering wall instead of a roped wall. But anyway, Yeah, I'm not sure what we're going to do with the inside of it. And I'm not even sure what we're going to do with the outside of it yet. We haven't figured out what kind of siding we're going to do. And we haven't figured out. So the building itself is going to have siding. And then the side where the pool equipment is going to have wood slats, like you were talking about, some sort of slat cover on the three sides. And I don't know what that's going to look like because it's kind of based on what the siding looks like. You know, they have to work together. So we have several decisions still to make.
I just sent you some, I sent you images of, I'll get you a better picture of the inside of the barn. But I just insulated the barn doors because now that the winter is setting in, the heat in the horse barn is turned on. Mm. The horse barn is going to have all of its own amenities. It's going to have its own leach field and everything, but there's no leach field, so the toilet and the sink and the water is not hooked up yet. But the heat is on, so that made me force me to insulate the doors. So that's why I'm showing you a picture of the inside of. But it's all just rough cut lumber that I got from a local sawmill, which could
looks cool.
Could be inspiration cool. For you know, for what you do inside. And it's not if you need to get back inside of it for electrical work, it's really convenient for Patrick because he just takes off a few slats. Does electrical work and puts them right back up. So what I do is we insulate the wall, put black tar paper, and then the material, the planks. And the planks will expand and contract with the weather. And they'll gap a little bit, but you won't even notice it. But if it ever gaps considerably, you just see black behind it because the black tar paper is behind it.
All right. So is the tar paper just there for that, or is it a moisture barrier?
A little of both. Okay. But, you know, there's a lot of air breathing in there. That's how I did the whole inside of here, this is a better picture. I didn't realize I had this. You can see, because I went horizontal everywhere because that's what the wall was. So I was able to just go right across all the 2x4s in the second picture.
Yeah.
And then I just went north and south on the doors because it just made more sense.
Yeah, that looks really good.
So we just finished that up. Nonetheless, I still got to trim out the windows and stuff, but added a little bit as I went throughout the last several weeks, just a little bit at a time.
Looks good. Yeah, I might have to show that to Jenny. She might like that.
Yeah, that looks cool.
So you made a point before we started recording, David, that when the day that this episode comes out is our 11th anniversary of this show.
Happy anniversary.
Correct? That's crazy.
Happy anniversary.
That's pretty wild.
It's a little wild.
11 years.
I don't know how we look back over 11 years in the next 20 minutes, but let's look back at 11 years. I don't know what to do here. Is it the biggest changes in you over 11 years in the show, in the community, in, I don't know.
Well, it's being in the pilot seat, it's hard to see the changes unless you really take the time to reflect. So I feel like I'm still doing the same thing I was doing when I started YouTube. But I'm not, because when I started YouTube, I was working within my means at the time. When you look back and you consider how much has changed, my property, my workshops, my tools, the things I've gotten donated to me, the things I've purchased, all the different tools to help me improve what I can take on. And I was saying before we got started how I feel there's nothing that'll intimidate me at this moment. I've dabbled in everything, and primarily I've dabbled in everything because I wanted to try and keep my YouTube channel fresh. And the idea is we help inspire people to make things. That's basically the overarching mission statement. To inspire people to make things, and as far as me to make things and new things like pottery and laser cutting and plasma cutting and welding and grinding and bending and blacksmithing and all these things that it's funny as I go through all these different disciplines. I remember once I did a video about my dad and the things that he taught me, and I remember the moment I learned this tip or whatever it is. I always still remember that moment when I get into something, and it's the same thing with plasma cutting, laser cutting, and leather working. I remember all my very first trials of those things, all in the last 11 years. And I still, it's still fresh to me, but it's amazing to see how far I've come as an artist and the things that I've learned. That's in my time on YouTube and the conversations we've had over the years. I remember first coming to the episodes and with you two guys and feeling like the odd man out because I had never CNC'd, I had never lasered. And, you know, we talk about those first couple episodes where, like, what's your goal for 2015? Oh, I want to learn how to laser etch. And now it's, like, so passe for us and many of the people listening. It's so commonplace. And it's funny, I was having a conversation with Dave Daugherty from DTB Fab last night, and we were talking about, right now, laser cutting metal is at the precipice of being only an industrial process, now being a home garage process. It's right at that precipice of a machine that would be $100,000 2 years ago is now about $20,000. You know, in 5 years from now, you could buy a 24 by 18 for $3,000 that can cut a half inch sheet of metal. Mm-hmm. And we were just talking about how, like, I remember when 3D printers were laser cut wood. Remember when the 3D printers were laser cut wood, and now they're these beautifully expensive, complex machines. Did I say laser printers? I meant to say 3D printers.
Yeah, 3D printers, you said.
Yeah. So it's been amazing to watch all these changes in the last 11, 12 years. You know, all these things that are available to us. And yeah, I don't know. In the last 11 years with YouTube and the show, it's just made me a more fearless maker, I could say. And all the things that are available to all of us, it's amazing.
So the show is 11 years old, and I've only been woodworking for 13 years. Before that, it was just high school shop class. And I remember when I first got started, it was all about making little crafts. You know, you have smaller tools, you have not much of a workspace, and I was really excited about all the small crafts at that time. And there were certain, you would read books, or there's not many videos on woodworking back then. There was just a couple heavy hitters like Mark and Steve. But they would talk about, you know, woodworking hasn't really changed in 100 years and probably not really going to change in the next 100 years. And that was way off because, so many woodworkers, quote unquote, have these CNC machines and these laser machines, and it's just part of the process now. I mean, I remember getting that first CNC, and, you know, there were people like, I'm out of here. This isn't woodworking. I mean, yeah. I think Nick Offerman still says CNC isn't woodworking, and that's great.
I can't wait till he gets his first CNC machine.
Yeah. And and that's the beautiful thing about what we do is you get to identify with however you want to. If you don't think of CNC as woodworking, you don't have to. And you don't, my progression over the 11 years was I was starting out with crafts, just trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I got bigger tools, more space. And then I started making real furniture that we use every single day. And now my focus is more on trying to get a little bit more creative, more on the art side, more on the just the wacky stuff that maybe is not woodworking anymore, but it's just more art. And so I hope 11 years from now I'm figuring out what the next phase is, and I love the progression. That's what keeps me going. I don't want to do the same thing over and over again unless it's a podcast. Every Wednesday at 9 o'clock, I'm here. But other than that, I hope it keeps changing.
Yeah.
It's going to keep evolving. It has to. It's funny when people say, oh, you've changed. Yeah, of course I changed because everybody's changed.
Sure hope so. Yeah.
Everybody changes. It has, you know, you just hope you stay ready. The goal is to stay relevant on camera, you know, and sometimes I'm not sure I'm doing that, but I'm just living my life and I'm just making fun things. And
well, one of the things is what the audience expects has changed over 11 years too. You know, when I started making videos 11 years ago, there wasn't many people doing it. And so people would just consume whatever that you would put out there. But now there's and this is a good thing, but now there's hundreds of people making woodworking videos or metalworking videos or maker videos. And as somebody who likes watching that stuff, you get to choose who you want to watch. You know, you're not limited, and you're like, well, so and so made something, I'll just go watch that. No, you can relate to a certain creator and follow their path because it aligns with what you're doing. And so,
go ahead, Jay.
That just kind of changes of the bad side of that is I have to now think about how that relates to the audience. I can't just make whatever I want, although I still try to make whatever I want and I try to get the audience to enjoy that, but it takes a little bit more thinking if I want to keep doing this as a living, because I am quote unquote competing with other content creators.
I was thinking how 11, 12 years ago, we all, for the most part, knew each other. And if there was an event, most of everybody was at that event. Mm-hmm. Even some of the Europeans would come. And now, how many times in a month do you stumble across somebody that has hundreds of thousands of followers, doesn't follow you, you've never heard of them, and then it's like a whole new world of...
Like, yeah. Where did this person come from?
Yeah.
And all the time.
Like, wow, like the world is so huge. This making it world is so huge. I stumble upon people every month that I've never heard of, don't follow me, and that's not a slight in any way. I mean, I don't care if they don't follow me, but the point I'm making is it's just like the Venn diagram has gotten, there's so many more circles in it. There used to be one circle in it. Now there's so many more circles in it. And then you follow that person, they follow you. And then they're like, oh, wow, I never knew about you. That's great. Wow. So that happens more often. In the past, it was just like everybody knew everybody.
Yeah. What? Hey, David, you were talking about like in the beginning, like when we got started, there were fewer things to watch and people would pretty much watch whatever. That made me, for some reason, my brain put that in the context of how I grew up watching Saturday morning cartoons. So we didn't have cable growing up, and so we had four channels or whatever. So Saturday morning, it was like you get downstairs at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and you got until 10:30, maybe 11 on certain channels, and there are cartoons on, and you're gonna watch whatever's there. It might be gummy bears, it might be WWF, whatever. You're gonna watch it because it's cartoons, right? Now my kids are growing up, and they're like, I don't know if I want to watch this one right now. Maybe I'll go to Netflix and see what they have. You know, it's just like this infinite number of possibilities. And that's not good or bad. I'm just saying it, for some reason, my brain went there. It is that same feeling of like, there's only so much and I want to take advantage of watching what I can, when I can. And then over time it changed to just like this flood of really good stuff across all different places by all different people, all different types of things. So it's expanded in a good way, but it is different for us. I was going to say that, like, you guys know me, you know that I spend a lot of time kind of in self-reflection and I think a lot about how life is and how things change and stuff. And thinking back about the 11 years that we've been doing this and what all has kind of changed, I was trying to see, like, I was trying to think about if there was a big arc or a major change that I've gone through. And I think it's a bunch of changes. But I think when I got started, the idea was that things would get bigger somehow through more people, through more reach, through more business. You know, it was like it needs to go this way, like an open funnel. It needs to go out. And then there came a point where it was like, I need to make the funnel go the other direction. I need to make things smaller, back to personal. The same goes with, I need more tools. Now I need fewer tools. I need, more time. Now I need less time at this. So it's all these like expansion, contraction things that I think I need this. And then I realize, no, maybe that's not what I need. But looking back on all those things and the addition of skills and experiments and things that I see that don't work, I think of my career in this so far, and specifically the time in the podcast, is like a honing. When I think of honing something, it's not about just making it sharper. It's about making it smoother, less friction, more perfectly used for the situation. And so, like, for me, I think my skills have been honed my maturity has been honed. My purpose has been honed. I think all the stuff that I think is important has been, I don't say purified, that's wrong, but like distilled. That's a good way to put it. Like those things have been distilled through trying to make them bigger than they need to be and pulling them back, or trying to make them more complex than they need to be and pulling them back, or trying to minimize things and realizing that's too little. You know, it's a lot of that for me. And I think I am happy that I'm still at a place where there is more honing to do. There's more discussion for us to have around how we feel about what we do and what we think is important. There's more products and to figure out. There are more projects to document. There are more, mm-hmm. you know, like, and it gets harder. It has gotten harder for me over 11 years to come up with ideas that I think are worthy of the effort to film and share. And, you know, I'm wrong about that more often than not, but I think it's gotten harder to find those things, but I think they're still out there because I think there's still kind of like a honing for me that is to be done, you know, until I at some point go, well, guess I'm deleting the channel now. I'm done. You know, mm-hmm. there's that thing is still in the future somewhere, I think.
It's important that there's always a little bit of a challenge in most projects. You don't mm-hmm. want to, you never want to coast, because coast means you're just going through the motions and you're just doing the thing. And I think that is what keeps me going, is I'm always trying to push myself just a little bit, do something a little that's different than last time. I used this particular joint last time. Let's try a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And, I totally lost my train of thought there. I was going somewhere, but that it's just that little challenge that keeps it going, and it makes it interesting for me.
I think resting on your laurels and like being like settling in is something I've talked about before. I don't want to settle into like, I already know how to do this, so I'm going to make another video about it. Mm-hmm. I already know how to be this way, so I'm just going to keep being this way. Like, I don't want that. I think there's a certain amount of inevitability to that in life. You know, you have to eventually settle into the fact that my back can't take this anymore, or I'm not as strong, or I'm not as whatever relevant, but I'm not there yet. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to settle in.
Well, that's I keep saying it's, I don't know if it's raising or lowering my threshold of pain. By taking on this house project and taking on some of the car projects, my threshold of pain has, what is it? Is it getting lower or higher? It means I'm not fearful.
It would get higher, your threshold, yeah.
And my threshold is higher for taking on projects. And every time I go, all right, well, let's give it a shot. I do that exhale and I go, all right, well, let's just give it a try. And that's what's happened in the last 11 years, is that I just keep, when I was in the city, people always say, oh, don't you miss the city? No. The city I was in a small cage in the city.
Hmm.
And there was so many things that were limited. It just literally moving around was limited, but also the certain machines that I could use, the things that I could get, my hands on, and just being up here in the country, it's limitless. The space is limitless. My ability to get something and jog it around is limitless, and the tasks are limitless. Yesterday morning, I woke up with not knowing that I was going to make all this space around my shipping containers. I talked about it on the show maybe before we started. I moved all this space around my shipping containers because my guy is going to come and paint them. And then when we were trying to clear just enough to stand next to them, I was like, we got the backhoe, me and Mike. Let's just clear all these dead trees. And then all of a sudden I have a whole new construction project around the shipping containers just to organize my backyard a little bit. I bought shipping containers years ago to make that my workshop. And that was my threshold of pain. I was like, I was going to live out of shipping containers. I was like, and then within a few years, I built that big building 100 feet away. And then I built another building 100 feet away from that. And so Patrick always reminds me of this. I might have told you guys the story. The first day I ever met Patrick in person. We had talked online for a long time, for about a year before we met in person. We were standing in my workshop, 2017. It was like the second or third day of December, and it was freezing. That very first cold day is intolerable because it's just so cold. And R&R Buildings had built the shell of the building with a roof, and that was a dirt floor. Everything around it was just gravel and dirt and mud. And it had these big plastic things that were blowing because there was no doors, just big plastic tarps. It was just the envelope of the building, exposed beams everywhere, green paneling on the outside, and a roof. And we were standing in it, and Patrick said, I go, I need an electrical quote. I got one from some guy. I don't know, but I'll give it to you. Tell me what if it looks accurate. And then he obviously took over that whole project. But we were standing there, and I didn't have any money in the bank. I just built this building for $40,000, I think. And I had no money in the bank. And I'm standing there, and I was like, I don't know where I go from here. I said to Patrick, I have no idea where I go from here. And every once in a while, he reminds me. He says, you know, it's so cliche, but, you know, if you build it, they will come. He goes, look at where you've come since the day we met. And you know, I attribute that to the channel, the show, the audience, and the fans. And it's just amazing. I don't know what point I began to make, but the point I began to make is there's been so much growth, and it's really been because of the audience and the fans and, you know, and
yeah,
it's been great. And I just try to stay relevant and keep the momentum going is a challenge. And, you know, I guess I started out by saying my threshold of pain is much higher. And after looking back at all this, and I think, oh, can I make this little chair? I'm like, look at everything else you made. Of course you can make this chair. Or can you blacksmith this? Or can you carve stone? Well, look at everything else you've done. And besides, there's a whole history of people who've carved stone. You certainly can do it. You just got to get your bearings on it and get into it.
That's a good point. Like, of all the things that have ever been made in the history of the world, we have the best chance at making them. Because we have the history of everybody who's ever done everything.
Yeah.
You know? No, we being the people alive right now, not the three of us.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty wild. So, okay, so future. You don't have to, I mean, we don't know the future, but what do you think is going to continue to change for you? You know, maybe not like long-term projects, but like, what do you think is going to change for you over the next?
Me and Dave, I think, are on the same trajectory to just keep evolving into developing art, whatever that is. Make things that aren't necessarily utilitarian, that are more artful. And I definitely am going in that direction. This year, Rachel placed two pictures of mine that sold for several thousand dollars. And then she reminded me last night, we owe the same client two more that I have to make. And they cross the threshold of art and utilitarian. They almost in a way like environmental graphics, but they are being sold through a gallery. So they are coming through as art. But in general, they're really, truth be told, they're environmental graphics, which is kind of like, you might as well be in a McDonald's wall that says like, this is where the playpen is, you know. But it is being sold in the environment of a gallery, so it is being perceived as art. But I don't mind, because I am a graphic designer that can do things three-dimensionally, so that's okay with me. So I guess that's where I'm going, more in that direction. I want to do big metal sculptures and more blacksmithing, sculptural stuff like that. Architectural blacksmithing is something I want to try and do more of. In a way, I take a timid approach by making the doors to my shop. You know, I always hope to incorporate more blacksmithing in that, but I'll get there.
David, same or different?
Pretty much the same. That's the path that I'm heading towards. I'm not real good at looking too far into the future. I mean, I have two videos that I need to do in November. I don't know what those two videos are yet. It's October 29th. I need to figure out what those...
It's October 29th?
Yeah. I have to submit a video tomorrow night for my next video. I haven't even began
I hope my future involves me getting better at planning, because I can't keep doing this. This is taxing on me. Like Jimmy said, I really want to focus more on the art stuff. I hope my philosophy and reasoning for doing making things evolves and changes and gets bigger and more grand. But yeah, I mean, I can only build so many chairs and coffee tables and bookshelves and desks before my house is filled with things. So I think I want to get more on the decorative side, the art side for sure.
Cool. Yeah, I find myself wanting more and more to do things that make no sense on video.
Yeah.
And so I think my future probably is figuring out a way. And I think the reason I don't do those things now is because the video stuff is so necessary to, you know, paying for life and paying for everything. My kids are about to start heading off to college in the next few years, and then it's just going to be like college, 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 like one after another. And that's becoming more real to me, both from a financial perspective. You know, I can't just start, let's just change everything up now. It doesn't work the same as it did 10 years ago. But also just the requirement on me as a provider and as like a day-to-day, the engagement as a father day-to-day is going to be very different when they don't live here, right? So not only am I trying to take advantage of that now as much as I can, I'm realizing that it's going to change year after year moving forward for the next several years. And that's both going to be weird, but it's also going to free up some of my time. It's going to change the financials of it. It's also going to change my investment and my free time and where my brain has time to sit and do other things like music and things that don't make financial sense, but they make heart sense. They make, you know, something that it's in there. It has to come out eventually. And I have to be able to put time at it eventually. And I recognize that right now is not that time, but that time is on the horizon. It's much closer than I thought it was, you know, a couple of years ago. So I think my future is probably, as my family life changes, as, you know, the kids move on, I think my work life is going to begin to change and loosen. And I hope, at least, that it loosens and I have more margin to be able to do things that don't matter to the business. I want very much to do things that don't matter to the business, but matter to me. Yeah. So,
you know,
If
somebody asked me for advice, and nobody's asking me for advice, but if somebody asked me for advice on starting a business based on their hobby, I would say do what feels right, but also get another hobby, because you need something that keeps your brain busy that is just pure recreational.
Yeah.
100%. And so for me, music is that. I think I probably have said this many, I probably said this years ago of like, I want to start a whole separate music channel and just do music stuff. I'm glad I didn't do that, because that music stuff is for me. And speaking of music, congrats on your daughter for releasing a single.
Thank you. Thank you. My daughter released her first single.
No kidding. This week, can we hear it?
And I've been hesitant to like promote that because I don't want it to be it's weird. You know, like I've always kept my kids out of like the social stuff and everything, but she's doing her own thing now. And I helped her record and mix and stuff like that.
Is it on really SoundCloud or something? Where is it?
It's on all of the everythings. It's on Apple Music and Spotify and
How can we search it? Bob Claggett Store?
I'm so hesitant to like, it's weird. It's a legitimate weird thing for me. I don't want to, I've always held their names back from social media, but she is old enough to make her choice about, you know, her name being out there and put her name on the thing. And if you want it, you can probably find it, but but I
you send it to me privately.
Yeah, I will.
Love to hear.
But either way, I'm excited for her. And it's cool to see, you know, it's cool to have a reason to be back into that world. And I think working with her on this first of what I think is going to be several songs Working with her on that has like reassured me that I can do that type of stuff again. I used to do that a lot. You know, I've been in several bands. We recorded several albums in studios by myself, and it feels like a long time ago because I stopped doing music in a band setting when my oldest was born. So it's been 18 years, you know, since I've done any of that with a band. And then since then, I did stuff on YouTube. I did music by myself for a while. But even that was, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 years ago, something like that. So working on that type of stuff now, again, has been like, oh, yeah, remember this thing you used to do for a really long time that you enjoyed a lot? Maybe you should do that again. I'm like, oh, yeah. So I have that feeling inside of me for sure. But any other thoughts on 11 years of doing a podcast or 11 years of doing anything, which is the longest I've ever done anything in my life.
Could you imagine if we're here?
100%. I've never had a job for 11 years.
That's right.
Imagine if we're still here in 11 years. How old am I going to be in 11 years from now? I'll be
100.
And I'm 58 now, I think. I'll be 69.
Surely we won't be doing this in 11 years.
You know,
at some point, somebody's got to tell us to stop, right? I mean,
I'll be 61. That's too old for podcasting, right?
Yeah. You won't even know what a podcast is at that point.
Yeah.
No, then they'll be just like thought balloons. Just like injected into your brain. You're like, hey, let me take my daily dose of thought balloons from Joe Rogan show.
So and by that time, we can all have our own personal AI. The AIs get together and have a podcast. And then we can just,
The AI will be us. It'll just like farm the last 15 years of shows and then just make a new podcast based on what it thinks what we will say that next day.
Called Made It. And it's all past tense because it's all stuff that we did.
That's great.
Anyway.
That's real
good. I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters because they're awesome and they have been around. A lot of them have been around since the very beginning of this.
Yeah.
In fact, I should look that up. I can definitely look that up. While you guys are talking about what you want to tell everybody about, I'll look that up. But for right now, huge thanks to everybody that supports us on Patreon. At every level, whoever has or has stopped or whatever, we're really grateful for the support. It really does mean a lot because we've never done ads. And when we look at the Patreon list of people, the number of people who have been a part of this for any length of time, who have supported us talking about ourselves and about what we do is pretty mind-blowing. So legitimately grateful for everybody over there, especially our top supporters, because they do more than they have to keep the show going. We're really grateful for that. That is A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Albers Woodworks, Chad from Mancrafting, Corey Ward, Matthias Garnow, Michael Manegin, Nick Ryan, Odin Leather Goods, Pete Rondeau, Rich at Low End Design, Scott, Daddy Yourself DIY, The New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, and Works by Solo. But also, people like, let's see, Wayne Taylor. Wayne Taylor's been around helping us out since 2024. Thank you for that, Wayne.
Thank you.
If you want to get the after show, which is, you know, another show we do after this, 15, 20 minutes usually, a separate podcast feed, you can only get it through Patreon. So go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up at any level, you get the after show. There's audio and video. Like, you can watch this show on YouTube if you want to see what we look like when we first wake up. It's there. But also, the after show is there. And the link for that is in the show notes. For the link for the video is in the show notes for the... It's on Patreon. Go to Patreon. That's whatever. Cool. You guys got anything to recommend? I have two this week.
Well, I'm going to talk... This weekend, I did... something weird happened on my channel. Maybe it's not weird. Who cares? It doesn't matter anymore. I put out two videos in one day. I put out a video in the morning, which was... So it's not 100% official yet, but I believe I'm going to be on the board of directors for the Rhinebeck Aerodrome. And if you don't know the Rhinebeck Aerodrome, it's been in business since the 50s. It is 100 acres in Rhinebeck, New York. And they own... It's probably the biggest private collection of antique airplanes. All pre-World War II airplanes. And every weekend, weather permitting, from April to October, they put on a weekend air show. And if anybody's ever in the Rhinebeck, Hudson, Kingston area, you see these antique airplanes flying over the river because they're just on the other side of the river from where I am. So now I'm going to be part of the Rhinebeck Aerodrome. So look up the Instagram. I'll send you guys the Rhinebeck Aerodrome and the YouTube channel. So one of the things I'm going to contribute is I'm going to start documenting. They've never really had anybody documenting in a good, proper way. So I made a video. I went over from my meeting with the board of directors and I went and hung out with Ken. Ken's making a thing called the Air Up. It's a small single wing. It's a flying wing airplane developed in the 1930s. He's making a replica of it. He's been working on it for 6 years. So I just did a little introductory interview with Ken. And Ken and I met a couple of years ago and he's become a big fan of YouTube and my YouTube. And long story short, I'm going to be doing more videos on the aerodrome. So you could go look at that video of mine. It gives you the introductory. I put it out Sunday morning. It was going to be private. That's why at the last minute, I was like, yeah, I'll just put it out there. Who cares? It doesn't matter anymore. Because I knew it was going to be a 10 of 10. No doubt it was a 10 of 10. And then I put up the marble video later that day in the evening. And that's like, I think that's like a 9.5 of 10. So that's okay.
Good job.
Yeah, does a little bit better. And anyway, so those, check out the Rhinebeck Aerodrome on YouTube, Instagram. And I'm hoping to bring more eyeballs and more people, and if I can, more publicity to the world of vintage flying planes. Many of their planes are approaching 100 years old, which is crazy. They fly all of them every weekend. Ken and the whole crew of guys keep the planes going. Pretty incredible.
That is.
So that's it. I'm promoting my video in the Rhinebeck Aerodrome in general.
Cool. Yeah.
All right. So one of my personal Patreon members, Ryan O'Keefe, sent me this channel called A Boat in the Woods. And it's a really, really cool channel. I haven't dug real deep into the channel. I've only watched the most recent video. But Ryan says he was a carpenter in the city. He bought this old boat, took it out into the woods, and he's been working on this 100-year-old boat. And I don't know, it's just, the videos are very well done. And it's just one of those channels, like, how did I not know about this channel? So it is called Boat in the Woods.
Boat in the Woods.
A Boat in the Woods.
Oh, that's the old man who started making the boat a long time ago, and now it's in the woods?
I don't think so. That's different. That's the SV Seeker is the one you're thinking
about. No, not SV Seeker. No, SV Seeker's actually made it to the water, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah. His channel kind of dipped a little bit. He kind of pulled a practical joke on the audience the audience wasn't happy with it. Do you guys remember that years ago?
Yeah, I do.
I think that kind of thwarted his visibility a little bit.
This is a younger whippersnapper.
Oh, okay. Then Mike, because I saw an Instagram clip of an old man who has this giant boat in his backyard and he's like, yeah, I brought it here. I was going to fix it. I still plan. And then the guy's like 90. He's like, yeah, I think by 5 years I'll have it done. And everyone's like, hey, you're not going to get it done.
So real quick before I tell you mine, I was looking at Patreon. We have the first person to support the show that is still supporting the show is Jeremy Gunkel. Jeremy's been around.
Wow.
All of our stuff for a long time. He started supporting the show in December of 2014 and is still supporting the show.
We started in October of 2014.
And then right past him is Ben. I'm going to say your name incorrectly. Ben Rufenacht. Rufenacht? I don't know. Also December, a week later, but still supporting the show.
That's incredible.
And a week later, Ariel Lopez. So there's more than one person who has been helping this happen since the beginning, and that is pretty amazing.
Insane. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. All right, so I have two. One is, I don't know if you guys watch Nerdforge. Mm-hmm. They're great. They're really funny and creative, and they do some cool stuff. They put out this video that I'm not going to spoil it. You just need to watch it. Because they did a super good job with it, and it's called It Was All a Lie. And just watch it, because it's like an action montage, like they made a story to get to an ending, and it's just really clever and they did a great job. So go watch that. The other one is Drew Builds Stuff. I think is, let me verify that because I just clicked away. Yeah, Drew Builds Stuff. And this was a video, I'd never seen his channel before, but this was a video that people sent me. I asked for help on the metal roofing, you know, in the comments, just like who should I look at? A lot of people said, look at RR Buildings, which I have. There were a couple other ones, but this video somebody sent, and it's, I don't know, an hour and 40 minutes long. And he builds an entire cabin, really nice looking cabin in the middle of the woods, you know, just on a platform. But the video is like super well done. Like it's an hour and 40 minutes. I can't even imagine what it would take to edit that and keep it interesting and keep it.
Yes.
but he did a great job, and it's this interesting combination of kind of music and not music and talking and just the sounds of building. And but he does talk about what he's doing in enough detail that, you know, you can learn what he's doing and learn to do it yourself. And so I watched parts of it and I jumped around to the metal roofing stuff. And but anyway, it's a cool channel and a cool video. So go check him out.
It's crazy that that video is longer than some movies that I watch.
Mm,
right. Yeah. And Drew Builds Stuff is a pretty incredible channel. And to just, like you said, put that together just seems like that's a whole task.
Yeah.
That's like building a house, but in digital format.
Yeah. And also, I mean, not only the work of putting it together, but making the decision that I'm going to build a cottage and I'm going to make one video out of it.
Right. One video.
Like that's, I mean, the logistics of filming and editing the video and everything, but I, you know, for doing the pool house, I'm like, how many videos can I get out of this? Because it's so much work. I can't imagine. And like, there's another one here that I haven't watched. Tiny House on Wheels, 500 days in 75 minutes. So he filmed something, did one thing for 500 days, and then made one video out of it. So, you know, I mean, the views pay off for him.
It's a great exercise in cutting the fat. You know, we work on videos and I'm like, man, that is such a great shot. That yeah. I can't use it though. And it feels, right. You know, you gotta, it just ends up not in the video. I'm like, that's such a great shot.
But at the same time, like in the hour and 40 minutes, like I said, I didn't watch the whole thing, but I jumped around and there are shots in there that are not necessary, but they're good, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's not a matter of like, you know, efficiency, I don't think completely. Anyway, there is an efficiency to editing. That's what you're doing. But he's not only showing a certain type of shot, he's making a good video. I don't know. It's pretty incredible. So go check out Drew.
I just sent you guys a video that was in my history. I forgot about Frozen in Time. This is an old video. This is from the 90s when this happened. But it's about a B-29 bomber that...
Ooh.
That landed in the Arctic, emergency landed in the Arctic in the 1940s, right after the war. And these guys go back there. This is how they did this, I think, in the 90s. They went back there to rescue it.
Is this where they found Captain America frozen in the ice?
Yep. This is the one. No, so they go back to rescue it. And it's not a spoiler alert, but doesn't work out.
So not Captain America. Got it.
No, nobody dies, but it's a very tragic story. They put all this time and energy into it, and when they get the thing flying, it catches fire and burns completely to the ground. It's been out there, but it's amazing. And then they have this old airplane that they come and go with, that every single time it lands, they got to change the landing gear and they got to change the carburetor. It's like everything was working against them. It was kind of doomed from the start. But just the effort that went into trying to recover this old airplane, who knows how much it costs. But anyway, it's a PBS Nova special from years ago.
Nova, yeah, cool.
Really well done.
Right on.
That's it.
All right, cool. Well, everybody, thanks for being here for all these years. Thanks for sticking around. And
Thank you.
Happy Halloween. What are you going to be for Halloween, Bob?
Dad.
Oh.
Super dad. Yeah. All right, see you next time.
Bye.
Later.
Love you all.